Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Jules Gill, the Entitled Planet podcast commences. How are you doing?
I'm very good, mate. I'm very, very good. It's been a beautiful week of sunshine here in the sunny capital of Wales. and I'm having a great old time with my friend, Scott, on a Friday afternoon.
So Hell yeah, you are.
What more could you ask for, mate?
What more could anyone ask for? Welcome along, any and all, to the Untitled Banner podcast, where we ask for all sorts of questions, talking points, whatever you'd like us to get into. And I'm going to try, and I'm not going to avoid Elden Ring, but I feel like we've done a lot of Elden Ring. I'm 70-odd hours into it. Mr. Josh Brown's managed to finish it. I know that everyone's playing it. The sales are ridiculous. It's beating Call of Duty, etc., etc. And we do have some Elden Ring questions. So I'll do a lot of other stuff, and then we'll get to Elden Ring.
Sure. I feel like okay.
It's just always there. It's like someone standing in the corner, and we sort of got used to them standing in the corner. But at some point, we should point at them and say they are still here, though.
I will just say that after like what 40 or 50 hours of playing this game now, I just was like, I'm bored of this character, and I've started again for no reason. I am just starting. I'm still like I was seeing everyone just being like, oh, everyone chooses the samurai and the katana as their first.
And that's
like,
what my guy
is. I was like, damn, I did actually, just because it was cool. And I've been kind of not breezing through the main game, but I've been kind of having a fairly easy time. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going full build into one thing that isn't Dex. I'm going to go either full mage or I'm going full strength. And I went for full strength in the splash of int.
Right. I'm right. We're talking about Elden Ring, Jules.
We'll move on.
Super quick. I'm the same thing. I'm about 60 hours in. I'm right at the end. I'm in the final biome. I know what I have to do to beat the game. But I'm dying to restart as a mage because I'm like a strength build. I just got the Sword of Night and Flame. It can fire laser beams and it's a great time. But
everyone who's like showing that magic is just completely broken in the sense of that. And I was like, I kind of want to be a part of that. But I'm like, nah, I'm going to play strength because I never play strength.
I had
builds.
Such a great, because I'm a worshiper of the Dragon Church. So I can summon the dragon heads and spit out fire or Scarlet Rot, and I was up against one of the bosses and I summoned two people in and all three of us did our dragon head magic at the same time, and it was just like three dragons just burning the living hell out of something. I was like, this is the best game I've ever seen in my life, to be honest. Anyway,
but it's a game that we will talk about later.
Yes, we'll almost talk about almost immediately, but we'll see how we go. First question from Corel Type Shaw, who says, which decade of video games starting from the 80s do you most identify with or love the most and why? Cheers from Indonesia.
Cheers, my friend.
Cheers, my friend.
I would say that the 90s is like, for me, was the peak video game era because it's like the PlayStation, the N64. You've got the smidge of the new generation coming in as well with the rise of the 2000s. But it's like you look around at some of the PlayStation 1 classics, like Metal Gear Solid made Scott Telford who he is today.
He just made Scott Telford. I wasn't
made me who I am today. So I feel like it's like instrumental to both our childhoods and our personal developments. Like the amount of times that Scott and I will just look at each other and say a PlayStation 1 name and have the other person go, oh my God, oh my God,
The thing is, like, it is so life defining. Like I definitely have the heaviest nostalgia for the end of the 90s, but it does cross over to the beginning of the 2000s. It is that getting the PlayStation 2, playing Tekken Tag Tournament, like all the music. The thing is, I'm a man who will sit and listen to the Tekken soundtracks. I fully admit that. Yeah. I love the Tekken soundtracks. Tekken Tag is an absolute banger. School stage all the way. And I have such an SSX music as well. I have such a soft spot for that early 2000s techno, I guess you'd call it. That like sort of that feel. I'll put the demo disc music on. If you go back on YouTube, people have uploaded old PlayStation PlayStation demo disc music, and I couldn't be happier. So for me, it's that late 90s, early 2000s feel when it was like gaming could be anything, and like Metal Gear Solid 2's graphics were blowing people away. The dawn of 3D, storytelling changed. Like you said, Metal Gear was a big deal. It's all that stuff for me. Final Fantasy VII is just in me at this point. Like, yeah. I can never get sick of it.
I was so happy as well when towards the end of the PlayStation's lifespan, they brought out Final Fantasy VI. They like redid it with the brand new cutscenes, CGI stuff, and they released it for that. And that was my first time playing that. So it's another instrumental moment of like what makes me a video game fan. Like there are certain genres that were completely defined in that. Now I know that a lot of people will probably be saying like, oh, you're looking back at it with nostalgia and like rose-tinted glasses, but I have been back and played these games like not fairly recently, but recently enough to be like, now there are some absolute bangers in there, and there are unexpected bangers in the 90s as well, like World's Scariest Police Chases. If you've not played that game, it is a laugh riot. You get to just like, you're just driving around in a cop car just smashing people off the roads.
Okay. Great. I would throw in Future Cop LAPD and Nightmare Creatures. Just Future Cop because it's like a Transformers. It's the best Transformers game that isn't a Transformers game. And the Nightmare Creatures was awesome. But yeah, it's that feeling of like what gaming could be as we got more cinematic. Metal Gear Solid was unbelievable. Like, I mean, even today, they hardly ever make games like Metal Gear in terms of the cutscene direction, in terms of the storytelling and whatever. It'd be late 90s, early 2000s for me. Have you ever had so much nostalgia that you just sort of like phase out for a second? Like you're 100%. Sort of sitting there like, I am completely taken over by all the memories I'm having at once.
Well, it's like if somebody was to open up like the Wikipedia page of like all the PlayStation 1 games, I'd look through and just be like, yep, that's a great one. Yep, that's a great one. It's like, I haven't even thought about that one in ages. Like there was one that popped into my mind the other day, and on the front cover, it's got like a tiger and it's like a martial arts game.
Oh,
you know the one I'm talking about.
That's yeah.
And it was just like popped into my head and I was like, what is this?
I'm Googling that. That was Tiger Pang Tang? Pang Tang? Typhoon, Wrath of the Tiger.
Yeah,
not even close to what I was saying.
What a game! It's just like little like gems like that people just haven't played, and it's just go play that game.
There was a game, play
Overboard, the one where you play like there's the little ships and you're just shooting stuff and solving puzzles. Amazing game.
The thing is, like I miss that period in gaming overall. I mean, you're getting it now where the indie space. That's why I always love the indie space. But indie games now have become like something like Sifu doesn't look like a pixel platformer. Obviously, doesn't have that indie label to it, even though it is still independent. And I feel like you're getting that. The budgets are now be applied to a wider variety of project ideas, which is what made the late 90s and the 2000s so great. And I feel like across the mid 2010s, loads of studios got lost off on just making the biggest, stupidest, most opulent thing possible that wasn't that much fun to actually play. Whereas like now you're getting a wider variety of stuff again. Did you play Ninja Shadow of Darkness on the PS1? It was like there's like a blue ninja and it was like an isometric standpoint.
Could do the
It was like what a was lightning move.
Yeah, yeah, there was like a... It was brilliant. It was made... It reminded me so much of Ninja Gaiden, if somebody had done it in a 3D perspective.
Like way more like it. Like stuff like that. Like there's a pure experimentation to the late like 90s and early 2000s that I feel like, it's not like it's completely gone. The indie space is the biggest thing ever. But they were showcased in a way that I guess sometimes the indie space struggles to get their things in front of people. Next question from Jacob Wright, who says, afternoon broskies, hope you're doing well. With Gran Turismo 7 shooting itself in the foot with adding heavy microtransactions after reviewers have praised it, is there a need for games to be reviewed twice, or should companies just stop doing shady moves like this?
So obviously companies should stop doing shady moves like this because it is incredibly oily for them to just be like, oh, by the way, there's a game that got 10 out of 10. We've changed the entire like in-game economy. It's bad crack, that is. But to answer your question about should reviewers review games twice, in a perfect world, yes, you should. However, in terms of your return on the making a video review about it, it actually doesn't benefit. So for example, you guys know that Scott and I, we work for like people above us. So we have to basically meet a bottom line when it's creating videos. They have to hit a certain amount of views in order to become profitable because it's a big company. You know how it is. So when we do our reviews, if they hit really well, fantastic. But if we were to go back and do a review, updated review, there's a chance that they wouldn't hit that threshold and therefore they probably wouldn't be approved by the bosses, even though we'd want to do them from an artistic standpoint because our viewpoint is reflecting a game that isn't that state anymore. We can't do it financially sometimes. But if it was up to me, yes, of course we would. We put up like if there was a way to take a YouTube video and add a section into it, like to upload an extra clip to be at the beginning of it saying, hey, look, here's a review of it now. This has been changed since that. So please go to this page here or whatever.
Hey, by the way, they've broken this.
Yeah.
The thing is with me, I've changed my thoughts on reviews over the years. Like having grown up with, you know, obviously the games industry for so long, I kind of just view, like, there's the go-to review, there's the I'm putting a score on this, that, you know, is it worth your time? Like a general sort of like value analysis. But I do think that reviews, I do think that game coverage is just an ongoing conversation now. And I think that if something changes with a game and something's terrible, like Gran Turismo 7, we did the review and then we did like a follow-up video calling out the microtransactions, saying that things had changed, letting people know what had happened. I kind of view all of that as ongoing review coverage. It is a review of the game, but it is segmented because it kind of has to be because the industry is segmented so much in terms of updates and everything else.
But the casual public watching that video, they're going to look at Gran Turismo 7 review. That's going to be your viewpoint. They won't care about anything else. It's like, weirdly, I got chewed out in a video that we just put out, which was video games that were ruined by microtransactions because Gran Turismo 7 wasn't included. Now, remember, the process of creating these videos are,
We just missed that.
We record them. We then put them out to editors. They come back. They get put into like a pipeline of when they're going to be released on the site. And if they're pressing, they'll be pushed forward. If they're not so much, they'll be pushed back. Now, because that game landed, my video landed after Gran Turismo 7 was doing the numbers and becoming like the hot topic take, it was like, they were saying, why haven't you included this one? It's like, well, because it was recorded maybe 3 weeks before this point came out. So it's like, it's very weird to be put into a vacuum like that.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing. And trying to keep up with this stuff, if you try to like, you know, because the games change all the time. Like even Elden Ring got an update where it changed the way map markers work.
Yeah,
it changed the way you
can
know where NPCs are. It's like, well, should all those people go back and that 97 Metacritic be changed? Like,
yeah, it's like 98% now.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, does that make it better or worse? Like there's all those kind of things. And like games change so much. I think for me, like the review conversation, I love a review. I love a score. I like saying that something is a 5-star game. I like really sitting down and analyzing it. I really enjoy doing my Kirby review. 4.5 stars, Jules Gill.
Nice.
Kirby is one of the best games of the year. I love doing all that stuff, but at the same time, I think a lot of people go, okay, this review, what's the score? How do I move on? What are the actual talking points? And sometimes I like zeroing in on them, whether it's microtransactions or something like the Elden Ring video that me and Josh did about how it's broken the industry, because it proved it proved all the AAA safe design philosophies completely wrong. Selling so much, not being remotely a safe product. It is in regards to a Souls game, but like in terms of the stuff that the Ubisoft would aim for, it's not one of them. So yeah, I kind of view all of it as an ongoing conversation. Hopefully if you're a gaming fan, you find people you like and you stick with the content they put out.
Yeah.
And we try and do as many reviews or biggest talking points as we can.
Like,
it's hard.
There's a YouTuber, Mandalorian Gaming, I think that his name is. And he's been putting out reviews for the likes of System Shock recently.
Nice.
And that game like obviously came out in like the 90s, 2000s. Like it's an old game. But like I like the fact that current day reviewers are making hour-long essay-length videos on it. Like H-Bomber Guy just put up a Deus Ex Human Revolution video. Obviously that game came out in like 2012, 2013, whenever. And it's 3 hours long. But I watched the entire thing from start to finish because it's such an in-depth approach to looking at game design from a perspective that I possibly hadn't considered it, that even a mediocre game from a time that I don't really care or remember about, it's like that now makes that topic worthwhile. You can make any game worth talking about if you review it in the right way.
Absolutely.
So it proves, like you were saying, that it's a review of a video game or an evaluation of it is not time sensitive.
Totally. And it's like, that's the thing. Like we're lucky enough in terms of the audience that we have and like obviously just being a platform on YouTube that you can bring back classic games and talk about, oh, you missed this cool thing in this game. Let's talk about that. And I think that gives those games longer length in a way that some of the bigger websites bank everything on the review period and that's it, because that's their major search term.
Like,
Wouldn't
you love to do like a series where on the What Culture Gaming channel where we do that sort of thing, look into long form video length essays about like video games that were instrumental to not just how the industry was, but just like within their own like niche genres. I don't know if I told you before I started working for What Culture, I used to just write like essays like this and do nothing with them. Like I wouldn't have the editing skills nor anything. I'd just be like, I have a thought, I want to put it down on paper. And I remember like going through my Google Docs the other week and finding a Nightmare Creatures essay. It's like 4 or 5 pages long, so about like 5,000 words. And I'm like, what was I even talking about here? I don't even remember it, but at that point in time, I was clearly passionate about Nightmare Creatures.
Well, things like I'll always maintain that a group of gamers, any self-identifying gamer, like, you know, someone who plays a lot of games, who says like, what do you do? I love video games. Like they bring it up frequently. I always think that passion can be applied to a whole bunch of different things. It's not like we only care about the latest game and that's it. So I've always like, you know, we've always like thought of ways to bring other stuff back, find lists for old games. games or whatever it is, and talking points for old stuff. So it's just, it's trying to make all those things work as often as possible and talk about the most frequent stuff. The review stuff is hard because I feel like a lot of different outlets have changed their approach over time.
Yes.
Just because the search term review is such a big deal, but you can do review style coverage, talking points, value sets, going forward. So it's an ongoing thing.
It's a strange thing, isn't it? Because like, if it was in a perfect world, we wouldn't have to do this. But I do think that going forward, if I was in charge of how we run reviews, I wouldn't put out reviews on the day of release. Right. I would literally wait a week afterwards and see what the state of the impact's been, and then put out like the things. Now,
that would be
a review of the game, honestly. That wouldn't be chasing the numbers, that wouldn't be chasing the metrics, because people have already made up the decision. It's not a recommendation product or video at that point. It is just, this is the state of this game at this point in time.
Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, that the thing that I would like about that is that it would factor in all the day one patches. It would be the likes of Gran Turismo, you would know what the microtransaction store was. We could do a whole podcast on the problems I have with the way you get access to reviews, the embargoes, the NDAs, the stuff that's not online. Oh, talk about this, but don't talk about this, and you can talk about this, but frame it this way. Like,
what's with the preferential treatment of influencers as well? Like, you have some outlets out there that will get a code like months in advance because the company knows that they are going to basically light the fires under all of their.
If you're Elder Scrolls. If you're called Elder Scrolls Fan 101, you're probably going to get access to Elder Scrolls if you've got a sizable enough audience because you're going to say something positive and it helps the marketing rollout. There's a whole other wing of this, which is to do with folding reviews, quote unquote, or folding coverage into the overall sponsored rollout of the game itself. You end up becoming part of the marketing and the advertising, which is a whole other thing. Like, I love Kirby, and Nintendo are literally using one of the quotes from my review in their marketing materials.
Oh, wow.
But no, thank you. No part of that was pre-agreed beforehand. I could have said the game was terrible. It doesn't matter. We don't have those agreements in that way. We're fully aware of, if something is terrible, call it out. Let's, like, we've done that with the Square Enix stuff and everything else. Like, it's whatever else we've got going on, we'll try and call it as honestly as possible. Next question from Alpha Oliver, who says, UBP, are you still having a lovely day? Well, yes, Jules, you're having a lovely day.
I'm having a fantastic day.
It's a nice little day.
The sun is shining outside. I've been out, I did some outdoor climbing at the last weekend, and I've basically just been doing some bits in the garden. Like, I'm actually trying to develop a green thumb at the moment.
Nice. I've done nothing with my garden. My garden is sitting. There was such a massive pile of leaves in the corner that had been left for so long. All the grass has died underneath it, and now there's just a big pile of soil and leaves. So, yeah.
Fantastic.
I've got no rush to get there.
We built two like planter beds in the back of the garden, and we put in some stuff there. So we've done like loads of bee bombs and loads of like wildflower sowing and some poppy sowing stuff. Because one's gonna be wildflower and the other's gonna be like herbs and veg. Ooh. So it's gonna be quite fun. I don't know if I'll be any good at it. Like, Kerry and I, we're kind of just like learning by doing, and we're just like Googling everything afterwards and being like, maybe we shouldn't have done that. And we're fine.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Coming out that gardening is... it is actually a very exact science. Like, you can fudge your way through quite a lot of it, but man, there are certain things that was like, this needs to only be watered like once a fortnight. Do not water it any more than that.
Well, the thing is that we, not to make this a garden culture podcast, but like, yeah, we, this whole leaf soil thing happens every year because like we have this insanely huge tree that got left in the garden for the house that we got. And it just, tons of leaves, loads of soil, mm-hmm, whatever else. Mm-hmm. And I just bought a big box of grass seed because I was like, grass is grass. I'll get this. This looks like grass. The box, and then I poured it all over the soil stuff, and there's different types of grass, Jules, and then the way that it grew in, there's different blades and different colors, and now there's just this weird patch of stuff that looks completely different, but then the middle of it is all chewed out because that's where the leaves landed again. It doesn't matter. Point is, we both got gardens and we're both struggling through the gardening life. Next question, or rather the rest of Elfar Oliver's question, was that their girlfriend got pretty pissed when an NPC could not match her speed. What other mechanics must be fixed that epitomize the experience of playing video games? Now, this whole thing of you're in a game and you got to follow a character and you run ahead of them and you're waiting for them to go.
I put this into a mechanics that suck video. Yes. Yeah, I remember this.
What else is on? What's your go-to, oh God, just fix this thing? Mine's always just checkpoint stuff.
No, I thought yours was weight limit mechanics. Like
there is where that too.
Over encumbrance where you just cannot move or you...
It's like, weird because Horizon and Elden Ring have, we sent this to your stash. And I'm just like, well, I'm just going to go there and get it anyway. So like, just let me have it. Like, I don't even, like, we haven't got rid of over encumbrance altogether, but we've made it teleport to your stash, which makes no sense.
Yeah. It's like, can't you teleport all of the weapons that are like apparently here? It's like, okay, cool, whatever.
That stuff's just, I mean, yeah, but like, I mean, actually, I'll tell you what, games have got better with this. Ghost of Tsushima, I remember making a point of this. Let me interact with stuff on the ground while I'm mounted, while I'm on a horse.
Yeah, 100%.
Red Dead, you have to get off all the time.
Like, I loved Red Dead for so many reasons, but man, did I get tired of the skinning animation again and again and again. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, we get it, dude. Like
fantastic. There's some stuff that just can be gamified. Let me hit a button. Let me have a decent radius for it as well.
Yeah.
I also hate, as a tiniest thing, I hate when a button does two or three things contextually that overlap with each other. Like, Elden Ring kind of had a solution where you'd use the D-pad.
It's still got one annoying feature where when you pick up a new item, or even an item that you're picking up for the first time in that play session, it'll pop up and you have to cancel it, but it's like the same button as the the signs on the floor. It's also pickup button or whatever, or like a hold to switch into your dual wheel, and you're like, stop it.
But it's like there's always like message on the floor, summon signs. We're talking about Elden Ring again, Jules.
I know,
but there's like summon signs on the floor and stuff, and I'm just holding, pressing triangle, trying to summon someone in before someone else summons them, and I lose that person, and it's all just on the same button, just hoping for the best. Next question from TJ, who says, does anyone in the world truly understand the entire story of Kingdom Hearts? Now, I'm not a Kingdom Hearts man. I don't know about you.
I gave up, man. Like, I played Kingdom Hearts 1 and 2, had a great old time through it, but I could not for the life of you tell you what was going on in it.
No.
I could summarize it down in the very sort of much memeified way of heart, heart, darkness, heart, 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 like keys. Like,
someone's heart isn't really a heart. It's like your metaphorical heart. They live inside your heart.
The thing that really annoyed me is that there was like a load of people that came out after Kingdom Hearts 3 came out and was like, oh my God, the plot is so easy to understand. Like, well, everyone is just making a huge deal out of it.
Right.
But then I ask you, my friend, why did Square Enix then go and release a DLC afterwards that was basically aimed at tying up all of the loose ends? If there wasn't all this like knotted ball that you were clubbing people to death with, then why are you able to do it?
Like, no, I know. I think that, I mean, my thing, I tried Kingdom Hearts 1, I played quite a bit of, didn't understand any of it, didn't finish it, didn't do 2 or any of the 20 that came out in between, and then I got 3 and I was just so completely lost. Like, I love it for the Disney stuff, but that was it.
Why did it have to have such a complex story? Like, the basic principle is so nice that I feel like they should just run with it, which is your friend gets kidnapped, he's getting exposed to darkness. There's heartless creatures out there that don't like the love and joy that the Disney worlds represent. So you've got to stop them. That is a simple story and I can get behind it. Then you go into Kingdom Hearts 2 and it's adding in secret organizations that are using this negative power to harness other otherworldly beings to destroy universes. It's like, no. Don't bother with that. just go, bad guys over here. Don't have all this betrayal and sort of people like folding into the other side.
Leave it be. As a Metal Gear Solidsman, I like when a lore, I actually quite like a convoluted lore because I quite like that I can sit and learn it and study. It has to make sense, like to some degree, but you can be as stupid and convoluted as you like, as long as I can actually sit down and parse it out. I quite like learning something like that and then going, oh, okay, that's why this does this. And I think it's funny. It's like an ironic sort of funny way. Someone asks you something about hot, cold, in Metal Gear Solid, you can break that stuff down, and I quite like doing that. So I get why it's fun in Kingdom Hearts sense doing that, but it's also impenetrable. Like if you came in Kingdom Hearts 3, it's just a brick wall trying to get it. So yeah, I don't know. There are people who would say they understand all of Kingdom Hearts, but they change it on the fly. Tetsuya Nomura just loves introducing new elements every five minutes.
I also don't like the fact that it was a story that they designed that you had to play all of the games. I don't think that a good gaming franchise necessarily requires you to have played every single game. Like you can jump in at Uncharted 4 and still have a rough idea of what's going on because of the fact they do enough contextual stuff to remind you who characters are, even for first-time players. And I feel like that's a consideration that does need to always be present. And I don't like the fact that it'll be like, hey, remember that character from the Nintendo DS game? He was actually integral to this mini plot that we've just got going on here. And you didn't know that. So therefore, none of this side arc story will make any sense.
Yeah. The thing is, like, I think it's walking a line because, like you said, Uncharted 4 does it really, really well, where like you're picking different things that represent Drake's older adventures in conversations. I do think you fundamentally get so much more out of Uncharted 4 if you did grow up with
that franchise 100%,
or play the other ones. But Mass Effect 3, where all the marketing was EA going, this is the perfect time to start. And it's like, no, it's not.
That makes no sense.
They'd be like watching Return of the King before you've seen Fellowship and Two Towers. Like, it's just not going to be, it's not going to work. Like, it's the end of a trilogy.
What do you mean the ghost guys weren't in it all the way through?
I guess we were all asking that. Yeah. But in regards, I think you need to try and walk the line. Next question from Nate the Gamer, who says, please no more Elden Ring. Well, unlucky for you, pal. We've already been there. He says, big statement, but WWE 2K22 is my most enjoyable game of the year so far. Not saying it's the best game of the year, but it's what I've had the most fun with. What's your most enjoyable game of the year so far?
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to say Elden Ring. Sorry, pal. It's just because I have not had as much fun playing any game recently as that. I mean, Metroid Dread was pretty close, but that was last year. So if we're going
all out, complete massive grin on my face as much as possible, it's Kirby. I would recommend. I love Kirby so much. Like, I mean, I completely subjectively, I love Kirby. I think he's an incredible character. He's so much fun. Just a stupid giant ball who eats everything. But in the game, they push. Honestly, I opened the review by saying, "You are not ready for Kirby in the Forgotten Land."
Right.
Because the things they do in this game, the anime influence they've got, the way the final boss battle plays out. There's some stuff in this game, Jules.
Is it just absolute madness?
I'm gonna send you a cutscene of what happens near the end. There's a Dark Souls boss fight in here, full on ancient cathedral, full on Dark Souls boss fight. There's stuff like that, and just all the different abilities and everything. I had an absolute blast with Kirby. I think it's a gorgeous, gorgeous game. I loved it. Like, there's obviously my side of loving Kirby, but I think it's a great like baby's first platformer that then goes so much further in all these different directions. It's so good. So mine would actually be Kirby, even though, funnily enough, WWE might be a close second.
It is a really fun game,
only because I downloaded all the AEW. I don't care about WWE. I've retrofitted that whole game as an AEW game.
Yeah.
And that made me just have a lot of fun just playing as all the different wrestlers from there. Next question, funnily enough, is an Elden Ring question from Matthias Grimm, who says, I'm loving Elden Ring to pieces, but I find myself having to take breaks from it to play something more chill. The absolute constant threat of everything can be a bit much. Have you guys experienced something like this with Elden Ring or any other game? Love you all. Stay safe.
Cheers. All of you. So yes and no. I haven't experienced it with Elden Ring. Like, I just want to respect my character because I was growing bored of just relying on the same moveset all this time. And now I want to try like a different field of options. But with terms of games that are like, I've just kind of grown bored of like, and stepped away from, it's anything that it turns into a massive collectathon. Like, I sometimes set out to like 100% a game and I just look at it and go, that ain't happening now. Like, I loved Nier Automata, potato, but it was like a case of I got through the main stories and then finished it. And I was like, cool. Then looked at how many achievements were left. And I was like, I don't want to put in the grind. It's just, it's a fun game, but it's just not got that grab on me yet.
Because do you tend to, this is like an overall question. I find that it depends what it is, but basically, do you tend to find one game that, and you play just that until it's done?
I have to try and do that because if I jump around too much, then I find that I get distracted and it's disjointed. Like, I did have a moment when I was playing Dodgeball Academia after your recommendation,
yeah,
and also Halo Infinite at the same time. Nice. And I found the bounce between them so like disastrously chaotic that I had to basically just, like, I'm giving up on one of these. And it was Halo Infinite.
Yeah.
I went and finished Dodgeball Academia instead. And I was like, yeah, no, that is the game that I had an immense amount of fun with. Then came back to Halo Infinite and its campaign. And I was like, nah, too many checkpoints, checklisty style things. I was like, I'm going to go straight through the campaign now, finish it, and not go back and collect any of those special Spartan upgrades and stuff like that.
See, I like the Big Dipper life, so I dip into as much stuff as possible. Mm-hmm. But it depends. If something grabs me, then I'll completely mainline that.
Yeah.
I do know what Matthias means, though, and I completely agree. In Elden Ring's case, I can't just play something that is stressing me out all the time. And it's not that I think Elden Ring is actually maybe the easiest FromSoft game that they've done, mm-hmm. Because of the options available to you. But also in terms of the boss patterns, you can get them down really quickly. The difficulty comes more from the amount of damage they do rather than just like, oh, this is an impossible thing to learn. Whereas in Sifu, like something like Sifu, you need to get all those timings right. You need mm-hmm. to be absolutely mastering those fights. So for me, I'll take a break from something like Elden Ring and play something casual. Kirby was a great breath of fresh air when I was reviewing that. Ollie Ollie World is my other game of the year so far.
Oh, yeah. I
almost swore that. Effing gorgeous game, I was going to say, Jules. Because Ollie Ollie World, the soundtrack and the way that game plays is just gorgeous. But I think it has to be a casual thing alongside. Like, I'm staving off Final Fantasy Stranger of Paradise or whatever it's called, Final Fantasy Origin.
Final Fantasy 90s Edgelord.
Yes, see, it's made for me and I need to know what it is. I've heard that there's just crazy... Frank Sinatra's in there or something. He's like listening to Frank Sinatra and Limp Bizkit. I need to know what that is. But that's too close to Elden Ring. That's too close to being a big game. So for me, I can't tandem it. Whereas if it's something casual, I can do it alongside.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of like, I would say that the game that I went back to chill out from, if there was one, was Sifu. Like, I just, when I got into the zone, man, I was just like, I'm not stressed playing this game.
Like, your first shot, you were flying through it.
I've done it now. I'm going back through just 100% completing it. Mm-hmm. So I was meant to finish it off on stream, but I did find a few of the extra, like, bits of secrets and stuff. And I've gone through and, what's it called? Spared three of the bosses.
Oh, I've done the true ending.
So I need to get the true ending and then I'll call that done.
I was going to get the plot. I was going to get like, the 100% thing, but it's like beat the game without under age 25, which means you can only get hit like 5 times or die 5 times.
So I'm going into the final boss at the moment with my current character, age 21. So I'm pretty happy with that, but it's just, I can't get his timings right. I can get through the first phase really easily now. But the second phase, I just keep making one or two mistakes and it's a whole life gone. And it's like, man.
They punish you for not getting those exact timings right. Once they're in you, like your muscle memory gets it, like you have this weird awakening of like, oh, it's like, it's literally Neo at the end of the Matrix. It's like, oh, I can block all of this without even really thinking about it.
Yeah.
A final question from Nado King, who says, what's been your favorite AEW moment and how has the company reignited your love for the business? So I don't know if you're still watching.
Oh, I am watching, mate. I have been watching it and I can say without a shadow of a doubt, the MJF CM Punk match, the dog collar match was utterly spectacular. I know that everyone was talking about Sammy Guerrero doing the like the massive like backflips and stuff off of the thing. I know the Hardy Boys coming back recently, especially Jeff.
This week's Dynamite was unreal, by the way.
When he just took himself out of the match. it's like merch table, bye now. It's just like, see you later, dude.
All the stuff with the Hardys has been. The thing is, I was kind of waiting. I'm not 100% convinced that the Hardys are back yet. They're trying. Like the Jeff did on Dynamite was great. Dynamite overall was a lot of fun. But sorry, I interrupted you there. But in terms of that stuff,
I'm just saying that MJF, whatever angle he's in, whatever feud he's in, is the best, man. I've not seen somebody work this well with a microphone in hand in so long. And going back to that match at Revolution with against CM Punk, the fact that it started so slowly, building, and then the blood just suddenly came out of nowhere. I was like, okay, is this going to be a short, like brutal affair? But they dragged it out. There were so many spots. I wouldn't say that there's like a huge level of creativity with the dog collar in there because they basically ran through all of the possible gimmicks you can do.
There's
with
so much you can do, I guess.
Yeah, but the drama that came from it and that beautiful moment when Wardlow came down and had the ring and put it down onto the ring and allowed it. I was like, mate, this is like the Ted DiBiase Vader storyline coming to a head and you've got this amazing grudge match and the promos before that match where he was like, I was a young kid and I'm really sorry. I want to apologize to you. And then he like just absolutely guts him. And I'm like, yes, mate, this is wrestling.
The thing is, they are nailing proper emotional investment. You really care who's going to win those things. And like, that fight was great for me. I love Eddie Kingston. So like,
he's amazing as well.
The article he did about his childhood was phenomenal. Like in the real world. world. Even though the kayfabe fake version of him is pretty much him anyway. But yeah. His match against CM Punk is my favorite individual match. But my actual individual moment that I adored was the culmination of the Hangman Page, Bryan Danielson stuff.
Yeah.
Where like Danielson had been an absolute a-hole for so long and he's just beating up all of Hangman's friends and everything else. And they had that match that went on for like 40, 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And Danielson just collapsed. It was like the villain just had nothing left. Yeah, like he went 10 rounds.
He beat him in every single absolutely, sense.
Yeah, just the cleanest, most heroic win you could possibly do. And I absolutely, I just when he collapsed, when you realized he'd completely spent himself, I was like, that's incredible.
I do have to admit, though, that AEW is one of those rare promotions where the story strength is so high across the board that the Adam Page storylines actually feel like the current champion of your brand is actually mid-card to
he's
some
a bit
of the
in the
other
background,
things.
Isn't he? Yeah.
I feel like he's had a decent run, but it's not been an impactful one. But that's only because when you're comparing it to other stuff, if you took away some of those other storylines going on, then actually it's still a very, very strong run.
It's quite interesting because I think people will look back on his reign as like, because he feels like a very identifiable champion if you compare him to how Omega felt. Like Omega was there all the time. He's always coming out with the Elite. And then in Hangman, he's in the background. Like, you know, if someone calls him out, he'll respond.
Yeah,
and he's got fire in him.
Yeah.
And he's always there, but it's like he is this sort of satellite champion that sort of drops in and you know, like he's kind of been a bit around and about kind of thing. But yeah, I think in retrospect it'll strengthen him, but at the minute he can feel a bit like he's in the background. None of this makes any sense if you're not watching the old AEW, but there's a bit of a wrestling resurgence going on at the minute. And if any part of you ever cared about wrestling or wants to get
now's
into
the
it
time.
Now is the time. AEW is absolutely flying and filthy casuals like me and Jules are watching it every week. So but also, speaking of filthy casuals, thank you very much for sending all your questions. I was going to refer that to me and now it sounds like I'm calling all of you that. Anyway, it's been the Entire Partner Podcast. Thank you all very much for listening. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hashtag, where are the mugs?
Hashtag, I have no idea. We put the order in. And hashtag, we're going to hopefully get them at some point. Hashtag, I'll go and prod someone on Slack. But thank you all very much, and we'll catch you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish. But you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast. So everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.